Hello, hello, and hello everybody. Welcome back for another episode, If Not Now, When. In today's show, I am so beyond excited to introduce you our special guest. We have Andra von Meyer in the show with us. Andra, or aka the Efficient Girl, her passion is helping businesses saving dozens of hours a day with automation. She believes in optimizing life for enjoyment for each and every day. Today, she is a co-founder of Efficient App, finding and integrating the software stack and streamlining and mapping the entire operation process to the software alone. Today, she is also a partner for Efficient VC, a platform invest in the B2B SaaS platform that she believes those products are truly a game changer for herself and her clients. With that, everybody, I am so beyond excited. Please join me to welcome Andra to the show. Welcome, Andra, for joining the show today. We are so excited to have you.
Thank you. I'm very excited to be here.
Brilliant. So tell us about Efficient Girl. What does that mean for you?
Okay, so Efficient Girl, that I guess plays off our company name, which is Efficient App. And to be honest, it doesn't mean that much because I was just trying to kind of create a Twitter bio that was catchy and could tell people really quickly what we do. So because we're an efficiency company, we help streamline businesses and their operations. Alex, my husband, put in his Twitter bio, efficient guy. So I'm like, I'm going to be the efficient girl. And I thought that was pretty funny, but I'm not sure if it's going to last, if I'm being honest.
No, I love it. When I see that, I was imagining you're like OCD to the extreme. At home, you have a different straw, different folder. But good to clarify.
I'm actually not OCD. And yeah, out of working with Alex, I'm definitely the more messy one.
Oh, wow. I don't see that. Mm-hmm. Amazing. So tell us about how the life is, you know, working as part of the Efficient App and do all the amazing things supporting other business owners to automate their processes.
Yeah, I mean, it's a lot of fun. I think we work with a lot of companies that want streamlined processes, but don't necessarily know how to get there, or more often have tried to get there themselves and ended up with like a Frankenstein solution of like a whole bunch of different software that they've tried to streamline together. And then their teams are just spending a lot of time doing manual processes. So what I really love is taking like really complex, messy things and making them simple. So, yeah, a lot of our day-to-day is talking to teams and going, well, what's taking up like 20 minutes of your time? What you know, that you're doing over and over? And then figuring out how to build automation into that.
Oh, why do you like about that?
Honestly, it comes back to the human element for me. It's the fact that if somebody's going to work every single day, I don't think it's very fulfilling, and I can see it in their faces and the way that they talk to us, that nobody wants to do like create an invoice 20 times a day. It's very menial. It's like, you know, data entry. It's not very creative. So I think when we can put these automations in a place and these software integrations, and then team members are like, wow, like now I can do other things with my work and my day to day, and they can, you know, kind of move forward in their career. They get really excited about that. So I feel like, as cheesy as it sounds, I feel like we're bettering people's lives by doing that in a very simple way and just making their life better at work.
Mm-hmm. Is automation always a big part of your life?
Yes, yes. In terms of the business or my personal life?
Anything at all.
Oh, gosh. Okay, so in terms of the business, absolutely. It's just Alex. So for anybody listening, I work with Alex. He's my husband. He was on this podcast 2 episodes ago, or I don't know how long it's going to be since this comes out. Great episode, so go listen to that. But for our business, it's just the two of us. And yes, we automate as much as possible so we don't have to hire any more people and we can do the work that we do. In our personal life, do we automate? I mean, we have Google Home and Google Home automations around the house. And then we also, try to automate ordering our groceries as much as possible.
So pretty much the answer is yes.
We try.
Brilliant. And was it easy to, working on business with your partner?
It was something we both intentionally sought out. And I would love to hear more about your story as well, because you work with your husband too. So for us, when we met at a co-working, co-living house, and we were in the similar line of work, and we were both single, and we were both very intentional about potentially dating somebody that we can have a romantic and business relationship with. We both liked that idea. So when we met, and, you know, Alex told the story on his episode, but he said, "I don't know if I want to date you or work with you." And I said, "Why not both?" And that's kind of how it started. So we didn't start working together right away. We really took our time to build our romantic relationship. But over a year and a half, we started taking on these little projects and we found that we really have complementary strengths. Mm-hmm. So we are not good at the same thing. He is he's technical. He's the organized one, like I said. We divide the roles. Like I say, I'm the starter. So I am good at taking nothing and creating a process out of it and then building it up to about 80%, and then he finishes it off. So because we have those complementary strengths, I think that's how it works. And we really enjoy it. We love it. I always advocate for people to work together. I don't think it's for everybody, of course, not every couple, but a lot of our dinner conversations surround business and the things that we're doing, and we both really like growth. So mm-hmm. I think for us, it really works really well.
How do you always know it works for you, even at the beginning?
How did we know it was going to work?
How do you know this is what you want?
Because I was so engaged in my career before, and I had been in partnerships before where dating somebody, it was like seen as a negative. Like it was like, can we not talk about work? It's Sunday. Can we just disconnect? Or, you know, when you have work on your mind and you have a partner that's like, come on, let's just like go out for the day and disconnect. And you're like, I am so stressed. Mm-hmm. I'm not really trying to be a shitty partner. I hope I can swear on this, but I'm just trying to move the career forward or, you know, care about this client that I work with. So I knew that it could be mm-hmm. something that could be very beneficial. Mm-hmm. And for me, I think it is.
Yeah. So proud of, you know, how you all come together with a vision and now to grow the business, you know, in a skill, in a way that really supporting clients, but can really, you know, be automated in a very balanced way. And I'm curious, along the way of building a business together after you all met, was it easy? Is there a challenging moment that come to your mind?
I wouldn't say easy. I think fun. I would say it's fun.
Yeah.
I would say it feels kind of like an adult playground because we work together. We have a lifestyle business, so we don't have investors. We don't have employees. We tried hiring an assistant once and we ended up spending more time working with the assistant and trying to find work and delegate work than actually just working on the business. So it didn't really quite work out for us. So we're very intentional that if we bring somebody on, we would want somebody who can manage themselves. So with that, yeah, I think just because it's just Alex and I, we get to wake up every day. We get to work from home. I think it's fun. I'm trying to think of a challenge.
Is there any moment?
It's also part of the pro, but it's hard to shut off. I think anybody would be able to attest to that. There's definitely sometimes when he's in work mode, say on the weekend, and I'm not necessarily in a work mode. And sometimes I would feel guilty about that and be like, oh, I feel like you're working all weekend. I feel like I should be working. But we're really good at communicating. So I kind of just tell him, like, if he's wanting to talk about work or he's wanting to work, and I'm like, hey, I need a boundary. I need to just fill up my cup. That's the terminology we use. I need to fill up my cup. And when one of us says that, because it goes vice versa as well, then it just means, hey, just give me downtime. I'm not in the space right now. And we always talk about, we say to each other, like, I can give you so much more of me if we tackle this, like, maybe tomorrow. Like, I'm going to be more present. I'm going to be more focused. I'm just really not in the headspace to work on this. So I think that helps a lot. But there's definitely been times when I've been like, oh my gosh, I'm just overwhelmed and I need a break. Especially at the beginning.
Yeah. So how do you fill your cup when you in that moment of overwhelmed?
I am partly an introvert. And so just reading, sitting in my room alone, sometimes just watching YouTube videos, exercising. I like, you know, yoga, boot camp, going to yoga classes, sometimes just going for a walk. I love the river here in Austin. It's amazing. So really simple things just fill up my cup in a really big way.
Yeah, I love that. I love that you have such a active communication pattern with a partner where you can have that down moment and really just fill the cup that needed.
Yeah, I think I have learned communication is so important. And there's many times when Alex and I have figured out that for months we weren't on the same page about something really, really simple. But it's because we didn't communicate properly the why of why we were asking the other person to do a certain thing. Mm-hmm. A really stupid, simple example is like we were staying at an Airbnb and there was like a light on in the bathroom. And Alex had said, can we sleep with the bathroom door closed? And I imagine when he said the light, I thought the light in the morning, like coming in from the sun. And I was like, I don't understand because we have windows in here. But I was like, sure, I'll just do it. So for like we were staying there as a long term rental, but for like 2 months, I just didn't even ask him like what the reason why he wanted the door closed until one night I realized he was talking about this little blue light that was on in the bathroom. And I was like, this is why it's so important in communication to just tell the person why you're asking them to do something, yeah. If that makes sense.
Well, as entrepreneurs listening to the show who are maybe looking for co-founder, who are looking for partners, join the team, you know, as you and Alice have such a you know wonderful partnership together, what would you share with her or him regarding how to look for the right partner?
I think just being really honest with yourself in terms of what you want to provide and what you want to receive in a partnership. So I literally like had a list when I was single of like, here's who I am and here's what I want to give in a relationship. I want to give support. I want to give love. I want to give, you know, I'm like, marketing. I like content. So I'm like, I want to be able to use my creative skills. These are just some examples. And then what I want to receive is I also want to receive verbal support. I want to receive support and I want to be pushed outside of my comfort zone. That's something that I value because I value growth. So simple things like that. And then I think, yeah, in a more practical way. I mean, I didn't write down I wanted, you know, a technical co-founder. I wasn't thinking that specifically. But I think, yeah, just being really aware of your strengths and then finding somebody who complements those strengths. I do have friends that are couples that have tried working together that have similar strengths, and it's just more difficult. And I think it's the same thing, like, say, even if I'm working on a content piece for a business and Alex decides to step up and he's like, okay, now I want to be like a content person and give my opinion on things. I get way more territorial, and that's when we're more bound to butt heads because, yeah, it's just too much overlapping. So mm-hmm. I'd say, yeah, find complementary strengths.
Yeah, I love that. I love that you have such intention to think about before you meet him, right, what that person might look like, the strengths, the skill set, and also what are the part of the territory that really you really want to own that versus others have. I think having that clear boundary will really help us to find the right fit.
Yeah, and I think also accountability comes into place because when you are accountable for certain parts of the business, it's nice to feel like you're responsible for this section and they're responsible for this section. And that's how you can move faster mm-hmm. together.
Yeah.
Ray Dalio has a quote that's 1 + 1 = 3. And that's like two people, I'm going to butcher this quote, but it's basically like two people who are working effectively together are going to equate the power of three people rather than like if you're working on your own individually and you don't have those complementary strengths.
Oh my God, I was shocked just because I say 1 to 1 + 3 all the time.
Really?
I tell people, first of all, I'm Asian, and people say Asian are good at math. And yes, we are good at math. And the math we like to do is 1 + 1 = 3. Mm-hmm. And you get such a beautiful explanation, which is, wow, magical. But the way how I typically say it is, I believe that when we all bring our authenticity on the table, when we bring everything we have on the table with a transparency, now mm-hmm. 1 + 1 = 3. Now we are greater together than we are separate mm-hmm. apart.
Yeah.
And that's the math that we like to do.
Yeah, I love it.
Amazing. Wow. Thank you for that insight about finding a co-founder, finding a team. And when it comes to VC investment, you mentioned earlier that you are deciding this is a business that you guys do not want to have that venture growth, right? Talk about the decision and how does that, was it a tough and challenging decision for you both?
It wasn't. And again, it was something we came together about, you know, early on, we were on the same page with it. So Alex started the business when he was 18. He's 31 now. So it's been a long time. And he was a sole operator in his business for the majority of that time. It was called CyberBytes at the time. When I came on board, we rebranded to Efficient App. And Yeah, I think we both have always worked with small, medium businesses. We, you know, I was a freelancer before. So I think we always just knew we operated independently really well. And to be honest, even if like someone gave us like $1 million and said, go scale the business right now, like I don't even know what I would do with it because our business doesn't need capital. Like we're very profitable and our biggest cost is our salaries, basically. So yeah, we just don't need it. And we also like just really enjoy the lifestyle business aspect of it. Like we get to set our own hours and boundaries. And I think when you have investors, there's a level of expectation, of course. Like if I was going to take somebody's money, I would be like, well, I don't want to let you down. So in this case, we're only letting each other down if anything goes wrong. You know what I mean? So yeah, I think we prefer that.
Yeah, no, I think it's so wonderful that you have that intentionality behind it, because it's so fancy and cool to say, well, we are raising XYZ versus be honest to yourself and your partner regarding who you are, what you want, and what really works for you guys.
Yeah, if I'm being honest, it was also one of the reasons we didn't live in San Francisco, because we felt very misunderstood there. We would go to events and people would look at us with these eyes like, why don't you want to raise? Don't you have big dreams? And I'm like, I have big dreams, but I also like just like my life. Like, yeah. I don't feel like I need to raise and have this story of being this, you know, building this billion-dollar company under my belt to feel like I'm successful. So we felt very misunderstood. And then actually living in Austin, we feel very understood because I think a lot of people here are optimizing for happiness and lifestyle. And I think a lot more people get what we're doing here. There's also a great book about it. It's called Company of One by Paul Jarvis. And he talks a lot about questioning scaling for the sake of scaling. He talks a lot about how, yeah, you can scale and you can grow, but you're going to have to hire more employees. You're going to have more costs. So there's costs associated with that. Also mental costs, stress, emotional costs. So yeah, I think we think a lot about how much do we want to grow the business? And even if we hired somebody to pay them a good salary, how many more clients would we have to sell just to cover their salary before it would even make sense to continue to scale? And yes, we can say, oh, we tripled our revenue this year. But if we have tripled the costs and tripled the salaries, like, is it really worth it? And for us, we've come to the conclusion it's not.
Wow. I love how insightful that idea is. And for audiences, maybe first time maybe heard that, maybe for a lot of entrepreneur or entrepreneur ecosystem, for them it's like scaling is almost like, yeah, of course. So what are the few questions you recommend founders who thinking through before he or she should go out there to raise or scale or hire, et cetera?
Yeah, I think just being intentional and asking yourself, like, if you want to raise money, what will you do with the money? And how is that going to help your business scale? Are you building a lifestyle business or are you building something that, you know, could potentially get acquired or IPO? Do you have the energy for that? We do angel investing and we invest in such amazing founders. Like, I admire them so much and I look at what they're doing and I look at how they make decisions and I like have goosebumps just thinking about them because I'm in awe of them and what they're building. But I could also recognize that I am not them and I don't have the appetite that they do. And it's just knowing your strengths and your weaknesses. And they're doing really cool, crazy things. I think just asking yourself those intentional questions will be helpful. I mean, I know a lot of people who raise and I'm going to stop there actually before I ramble.
No, that's a great insight. And, you know, especially you not only have your own business, but also you invest on those great entrepreneurs in the meanwhile. I'm curious, you mentioned about, you know, you meet a lot of just incredible, you say crazy and smart individuals. What are the common traits you see with the investment you make with the entrepreneur you admire? How are you looking at the right team, right people?
Yeah, I think I really like people and like the traits that they have, in the sense that they're typically just humble, good people. Like they have a really pure way of making decisions. They make decisions I don't know how to articulate this in a good way. They make, you know that quote, like, be the change you want to see in the world?
Yeah.
They make decisions according to that. And they're just humble. They're good people. That's the best I can do with the common theme.
Yeah. So how do you invest when you and your analyst looking at your portfolio, looking at companies, right? What are the criteria you are looking at to say, wow, I want to be part of that company, that vision?
Yeah. So Alex typically sources the deal. So he has been in the space, like I said, since he was 18. What he does in his free time is he evaluates software and he plays with software. So in the background, he literally, like, out of so many conversations that we've had, when somebody says, have you heard of this software? Alex, 90% of the time, I would say 99% of the time, has been like, yes, here's what's good about it. Here's what's not good about it. So he has that kind of mind. And he always, I think in the back of his mind, well, maybe not always, but more recent years, he's thought about angel investing a lot. And he goes through the initial, I guess, evaluation. And then certain software, not a lot, kind of stand out. And then he's like, let's implement it in our business. So then we start using it. And then I get to test it from, like, how much have I adopted this? How much am I enjoying using this? You know, where am I frustrated with this? And then we talk a lot about it. And then eventually it gets to the point where we're having dinner table conversations about these companies. And it's always B2B SaaS and their features and their team. And then the conversation typically comes up of let's ask to invest. And we always approach them.
Wow, I love that. Would you say that you are the tech gal as well? You are technical?
I'm not technical. Like, I don't code. I could build, like, basic automation. He is much more technical. But I understand. I understand it. Yeah.
I love that you're just jumping in, try on the business and having a conversation about it.
Yeah, I mean, I am not always happy about it, I'll be honest. Sometimes I have burnout and fatigue and I'm like, Alex, not another software. Please, please, no more. Please, like, let's not change anything. And he's like, come on, like, try it. This is why I like it. And then sometimes he gets it, like Dispatches. It's a software we did just invest in. It's an interface on top of Slack that basically gives you, like, the ability to prioritize your notification and to archive messages, kind of like an inbox. It's like the superhuman for Slack. So he got it initially when I was in my burnout stage. And he had it for, like, I don't know, maybe 4 hours. And I was like, okay, now I want it. Like, sign me up. Sign us up as a team. And then I started using it and I loved it. And yeah, same thing. Approached the founder and invested.
Dispatch?
Dispatch.
Was it the woman-owned business?
I think they, male and female.
Male and female.
I think it's a female CTO.
Great. I think I saw their pitches.
Yeah.
Yes,
okay.
Yes, yes. Wow. Okay, great. Since
I haven't even seen their pitch. I saw them on Product Hunt, of course. But yeah, we just had a relationship with the founder.
They are fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
Well, since you are this, you know, efficient girl, right? You play with software all day long. You are in automation conversation all day long. Is your top three, top five software that everybody should have when it comes to enterprise, when it comes to entrepreneurs?
So we don't work with enterprise. We work with teams. So
teams.
Let's say between 5 and 70 team members. More typically, like, let's say 5 to 20. But, okay, so the essentials, I guess, for somebody who's into productivity, right now it's Arc Browser is, like, have you heard of it?
No.
Oh, okay. So, yes, after this, we'll send you an invite. Arc Browser, it is phenomenal. It is a replacement for Chrome. So it just changes your whole workflow. It's much more prettier. It has beautiful UI, UX. So that is my number one. Motion, which is another investment that we made. It's a calendar tool and allows you to put your tasks on your calendar. So it just helps you always, like, look at your day and go, here's what I need to do.
I love that because I do it on my calendar manually, which is not pretty.
Yeah, see, I used to do that too. And then it was like when Motion started doing it, and we invested in them before they were even doing that. They were just like a scheduling tool. And then they were like, we're building this task feature where you could put your tasks on your calendar. And I was like, why doesn't this exist? Because I am doing it manually. So yeah, that's phenomenal. That's, you know, I open it up tens and tens of times a day. Dispatch, number three, because I hate Slack. I was not using Slack before. I was one of those team members. I mean, it's only me and Alex and we live together. So I was also like, I'm not even wanting to go in there. It's a mess. There's too many notifications. So when we got Dispatch, and then I realized that, oh, this is actually really helpful and we can, like, coordinate better on certain topics. Those are my top three. And then if we go into more of the business space, I mean, everyone needs a CRM, I think, or maybe I won't say everyone, but most businesses need a CRM. Copper CRM is our favorite. It's the CRM for Google Workspace. Yeah, I'm going to say top four.
Okay.
There are others, but it would get into specifics of what that business needs. Actually, you know what? Airtable.
Airtable.
Everyone, you know Airtable.
Yes, but yeah. I got a couple resources, things like that, but not like deep into it.
We use Airtable for almost all of our customers. We use it as a complete replacement to Google Sheets. And again, it's much more prettier. This is how I describe software. It's prettier to use, but yeah. Functionally for building automation, it is beautiful and amazing, and we can trigger a lot of the automations. Yeah. So if somebody needs like their CRM with the e-signature tool connected and their website forms, we'll pass that all over to Airtable and yeah, connect it through that.
You have so much light when it comes to the beautiful design software that have amazing function when it comes to automation.
Yeah, I like pretty things. And
hey, we all do. Who doesn't, isn't it?
I just appreciate it. It makes me enjoy my life more and my work. Like if I'm going to work, I might as well, you know, yeah. be surrounded by beautiful software.
I love that.
I think that's a huge pro.
And you mentioned earlier about optimizing happiness. What does that look like for you, Andra?
I think optimizing happiness, I think, like I was saying earlier, filling up my cup. I think for me, choice is a really big element. Being able to choose how I spend my mornings, how I spend my day, what customers I want to work with, what teams I want to work with, what software I get to use, who I work with, Alex in particular. I think I've optimized my life to have choice, and that makes me feel empowered. And yeah, I was not a great employee. I'm not a great person to go work for like a corporate company because sometimes you don't have as much choices in those scenarios, like, for example, of what software to use. So I know myself and I know those circumstances don't bring me as much joy. So yeah, for me, it's all about like the very little things. Naval has, he tweeted some time ago and he said, if you can't enjoy a cup of coffee, you won't enjoy anything else in life. And I honestly mm-hmm. think about that every day. It was just one of those one-liners that every morning when I have my latte, Alex makes great lattes. You have to come over, by the way.
That's what I heard.
Yeah, please come over. He makes amazing lattes. But yeah, I have my latte and that is like, I am filling up my cup with that. And then everything else that comes after that is just, yeah, it's I go in motion and I look at like, here's all my tasks that I need to do. What would I enjoy doing first, second, third? And it's nice to be able to ask myself those questions.
I love that. If you can't enjoy a cup of coffee, we can't enjoy anything else.
Yeah, it's very simple, but I think it's profound.
Mm-hmm. Well, sometimes I think the big thing in life is not always hard. Simple is always not always easy, but oftentimes might be the answer.
Yeah, yeah. And I think it's you know, one thing I've been thinking a lot about is also success.
Yeah.
Lately, I know this is a topic you talk about on your podcast. I've listened to a few episodes. And yeah, I think the question of when, I'm asking myself the question in a way, but it's like, what does it mean to be successful? And I've been thinking about it and it's like just having the ability to allow yourself or to build the muscle to feel successful is success in a way, because I think a lot of people, it doesn't matter how much they have, they can never feel it and they will never feel it. And part of that is mindset privilege, which is a term I learned just this weekend from another podcast. And it's, you know, the ability to even think positively or to be grateful is kind of a privilege that I guess starts from childhood at a certain point. So it's just, I don't know, some food for thought.
So how do you do that yourself?
Which part?
The part that you said to feel successful with all the amazing thing we accomplish, instead of thinking, wow, that's great, but there's so much more, and maybe felt like a defeat, or people call it a failure, or imposter syndrome.
Oh, I have imposter syndrome. I'll be honest, I have imposter syndrome. I think I definitely struggle with those things, but I think the goalposts keep moving, and I think I'm really in awe of where even my life is right now.
Why?
I just never planned to even be here. Like I grew up in Toronto. My family immigrated from Romania when I was 5.
I did not know that.
Didn't know English. And I just like kind of was thrown into this different culture. I mean, I was young, so picked it up. But then grew up in Toronto, then moved to Australia. I lived there for 6 years in my 20s. And then, you know, wrapped up that chapter of my life and bought a one-way ticket to do some traveling. And that was before COVID hit. And that's when I met Alex. And from there, like, I did not plan any of this. That's happened. I did not plan my relationship. I did not plan the business that I have with Alex. I did not plan to be, you know, angel investing, like that was a huge stretch outside of my comfort zone. That's not something that when I was younger, I would sit and daydream about. So I think when I have imposter syndrome, or when I'm in these moments when I'm feeling like, oh, there's so much more we can do, or we can grow the business more, all these things, it's like, I kind of just really take a moment, and as cliche as it sounds, it's like, come back to the present moment, come back to the cup of coffee or our apartment. I love our apartment. You come over, I'm going to say again. And yeah, just it's very much a exercise of being still internally and going like, wow, like, what are the things that I have experienced today or yesterday that I didn't think I would experience? And it just helps me feel grateful in the moment. It's so easy to allow ourselves to just think of the things we don't have.
I love that so much, because I think today a lot of people, maybe they left corporate world, come to entrepreneurship world thinking now they're going to chop their own length. But sometimes without intentionally thinking about it, we put ourselves back to that hamster wheel again. Mm-hmm. Like you said earlier, the goalposts keep moving. Mm-hmm. Maybe this is, you know, X growth. And then once I achieve that, well, there's next thing and there's next thing. When we somehow sometimes just fall into that, there's so much more, rather than thinking about it, there's so much more we already have accomplished.
Yeah. And to that person that left the corporate world, like, yes, you might be doing your startup and, you know, with every entrepreneur, you have days where you feel horrible. Mm-hmm. It's like, it's such a privilege to get to feel horrible while you're doing your own business. Like,
oh, so good.
Like, I feel like there is just gratitude that could be had in that, and being like, wow, like, mm-hmm. this is my life. I get to try to build a business. Like, there is absolute privilege in that. It means that you can, you know, hopefully support yourself in terms of all your basic means and take this risk. And that is beautiful. That mm-hmm. is like, you get to live, in my eyes, like a little bit more life than the average person.
I love that. I love that. You know, for me, when that times are hard, because I think for businesses, ultimately, with that up and down and that mm-hmm. that pendulum swing sometimes could be hard to take, I tell myself, I choose this.
Yes.
This is exactly what I want.
Yes.
Even in the hardest moments, I wanted this. This is perfect. And I think that acceptivity just allowed, like you said, the present moment to enter and realize everything is all here and now.
Yes. Yes, exactly.
How beautiful.
Yeah.
We talk about success, we talk about happiness. So what do you really want? What is next for you, Andra?
I don't know. I don't know. We don't have goals in our business. We don't have metrics that we're pushing ourselves to hit. We are very much in a point of our business where we are almost pivoting in a way. We're working a lot on our website to be kind of like a central source for all the software knowledge that we have in our minds, myself and Alex, and putting it down onto a website. Our website traffic is increasing day by day. We are blown away. Like, I keep talking about these little things, and we're not getting like hundreds of thousands of people, but, you know, we were getting at one point 200 people a month, and now it's like, say, 1,500 a month, and that happened fairly quickly. So we're seeing these little results. And then with that, we're just getting more inquiries. We're working with great teams. We have great customers. So I think just continuing on the path and then being just really open to what comes our way. I mean, I had no idea mm-hmm. I was going to be here today on this podcast. Just a few weeks ago, I booked it, and this was out of my comfort zone. So I think for me, when I'm doing things out of my comfort zone, it means I'm growing, and I'll just continue doing that bit by bit.
What does American dream mean for you? Since you come a long way, and it sounds like every single day, steps, journey was never planned. What does that mean for you?
The American dream, partly.
If you have that.
Yeah, partly I feel like I am living it. And, you know, I mean, all this is relative. Like, someone could look at my life and be like the people in San Francisco is like, oh my God, you haven't had a $1 billion exit. Like, you're nothing, you know. For me, this is in many ways enough. And I'm very happy with that. You know, we want kids one day. So that will be a great next chapter. I always joke, and I'm like, by the time they're five, they're going to be working in the business. We're going to be teaching them how to write an email and how to build automation. I think that's probably a stretch saying they're five, but they will get some good business training from us. But yeah, it's hanging around with great people. We have, I mean, when did you move to Austin?
5 years ago.
Okay. It's very welcoming here. Do you find that as well?
Yes.
Yes.
People say, keep asking where. And that's how I interpreted it. It's a very opening, very collective culture where everyone's weird. Everyone's all welcome in this, you know, magical and weird place.
Yeah. I am shocked. We've only been here a year. And I feel like in many ways we have deeper friendships than we've had or I've had in other places. I think because we're all transplants, we've all moved here, you know, in the past 5 years, everyone just knows what it's like to kind of start again and not to have your whole family here. Not many of our friends have, you know, their mothers and fathers and sisters and all of that here. So I think we all just kind of connect as a little family. And that's been really fulfilling as well. I feel really grateful because, like, again, it feels like an adult playground where you're really getting to like meet cool people. And mm-hmm. not a lot of people, I think, in other places still get to feel that in their 30s.
How do you cultivate the ability to be grateful for even a simple cup of coffee and for every single day? You commented earlier, I noticing that you have such a groundness about how you see things, which is so beautiful. And you comment about maybe people in San Francisco maybe disregard what we have built here, but it's never about that. Mm-hmm. I think life is like shoes you wear. It does not matter how beautiful you look outside, mm-hmm. whether you're comfortable or not, only you will know.
Mm-hmm.
Whether I say that's a good color on you or not, it's never relevant. But I love that you have such ability to appreciate the moment, appreciate the present, appreciate friendship, appreciate those things. I think really are all important, but hard to measure.
Yeah.
How do you do that?
I think a lot about death, actually, probably more than the average person. And this also just came from an early age. I would always think, well, if I'm on my deathbed, what would I regret? And I think what I would regret is not enjoying the little moments. And I think it's like this just this weekend, it was raining and I was walking to, you know, pick up a book from the library, which is another one of my little joys. I go to the library like a old person, but I love it. But yeah, so I'm walking and I like am just looking at the grass and the rain and the air is crisp. And I just go through like the little list in my head. Like, I'm just like, you know what? What if you didn't get to be here? What if life is just a game? What if we're all in a simulation? Like, all those things are just very healthy questions for me to ask myself. And that's what brings me back to like, you know what? There's not that much that's that important. And the end of the day, when I go to bed at night, am I happy with my life? And when the answer is no, and that has happened before, I've changed and made major changes. I've moved countries, I've moved cities, I've broken up relationships, etc. So yeah, it's the reflective piece.
Wow. Is this something that you wish people know about you, but oftentimes people don't?
I don't know. That's a good question.
Well, I'll tell you mine first.
Yeah, okay.
Because often people see me, people say, wow, well, you must be so extrovert. You're so bubbly. You're so all the things. But I'm actually, I don't want to say secret introvert, but I think I'm introvert inside where mm-hmm. I really love spend time alone. Mm-hmm, I enjoy mm-hmm. meditating. I love just being alone. Like, I don't know how to explain it. Like, I love people, but I'm also so enjoy being alone and just use my imagination and think.
Why do you wish people knew that about you?
Oh, I just want to, maybe not wishing, I just don't like people just assuming that. Like, for example, South by just happened. There are 1,000 different networking events, things. And I was like, well, guys, this is so fun, I'm going to go. They were like, when? Where are you going? I said, home. They were like, no, when? We just got started. I said, great, you all have fun. I'm introvert, I'm going to go. They were like, no, when you are not. You are lying.
Okay.
I said, no, I'm so dead serious. This has been so fun. You all enjoyed it. I'm going to peacing out. I'm going to go home, get the tea, and just fall asleep on the couch. Like, I love that. But I think oftentimes people don't always know that about me. And I think I think maybe we're all just all multi, you know, facet. We're not just one thing. We are all
yes.
the things. And I think oftentimes just, you know, we meet each other for a minute or two. We say, oh, she is that or he is this.
Yeah.
And therefore put people in the boxes without really seeing the whole aspect of others. And since this is a podcast about you, I'm curious if there's any aspect about yourself that maybe you wish people know or people often not get it wrong.
Yeah, okay. I think mine is I wish I think people can perceive that I have it easy or things come easy for me because I talk about like, oh, I moved to Australia, you know, and then I moved here and then things just happened. And, you know, Alex and I have our own business. So I think people are like, oh, I mean, I don't even know if people think this, but nobody comes up to me and says it. But what I wish people understood is that things are really scary for me. And I'm not, you know, I try to be brave a lot. And it's very uncomfortable for me a lot of the time. So what other people may perceive like, oh, this is so easy for her. It's not. I actually think a lot about things and I put a lot of mental energy into things. And maybe sometimes it could come out like it looks easy, but it's been like hours that I've been, or days or months that I've been thinking about something and processing something.
So how do you move forward when fear presents for you?
Mainly just, actually, I'm going to reference your TED Talk. Burning the boat.
Yes, yes.
Yeah. Do you want to share for anybody that's listening that might not have heard?
Yeah. Well, I'd love to hear your thought and I will jump in.
Okay. Well, part of your story in your TED Talk was that, you know, you're on this boat and you burn the boat and you can't go back. Like you know, an example is like we committed to doing this podcast and there was so much going on right now in life. And there was a part of me that was like, this is not even a good time. Like, this is, you know, I'm nervous about it and I don't know, you know, if this is the right thing, but I booked it. And by booking it, I was like, well, I can't let one down and I'm not going to not show up. So I burnt the boat. And then I'm like, you know, all weekend, I'm like, the boat is going and I'm on it and I just have to do it. So yeah. I think it's, you know, booking, you know, creating a content piece and putting it out there. And then you get a lead and you're like, great, now I'm going to jump on that sales call. And, you know, it's not like I go into every sales call like, oh, I'm, you know, the best and I know what I'm going to say. And it's still nerve wracking for me till this day. So yeah, burning the boat, I think, is a good analogy because I think it's like you just take the next step and then you just commit to doing it and then you have to do it. You can't go back. And that's been helpful for me.
Well, you definitely make it look so easy, Audra. I can never tell. You have such a presence and you have such the beauty that's inside and outside of you that you make everything so, you have just such a presence that I can never guess that you were nervous or you were not ready.
See, that's very sweet, but it's a misconception because, yeah, I thought just about today, probably for a week straight.
Yeah.
Every day in my mind, waking up in the middle of the night.
Oh my God.
Literally having like nightmares. I had podcast nightmares. I woke up this morning and was not, yeah, in a super confident state. And I say that because, yeah, I think for anybody, I mean, I know a lot of people who listen to this podcast are entrepreneurs and they're already doing their thing. So this won't be that relevant. But for anybody who wants to do something, I think part of the fear, feeling the fear is part of it. And that's what I remind myself. Like, it is normal to be scared of things. Mm-hmm. So that's okay. And I think,
I love that.
Yeah, if I stop being scared of things, then I'm probably too comfortable and I'm probably not growing anymore. And then I'll probably get bored. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I crave it.
I love that. You know who you are and you're also pushing yourself in a healthy dose of encouragement and fear in that combination and then really help you to step in outside of your comfort zone every single day.
Yeah.
And I think that is one of the reasons that you are so incredible, such a bright light today.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
Incredible. Is there anything else you felt I have not asked that you want to share with fellow entrepreneurs who may be in the process of scaling, growing their business, maybe felt a little bit alone, maybe felt a little bit scared, fear that we talk about? Is there anything else you want to share with her or him?
I would say feel free to reach out to myself and Alex, especially, and it doesn't matter where you are in the world, actually. I was going to say, especially if you're in Austin, but I think we both admire people that are just putting themselves out there and are doing things differently because it's not easy. I mean, it's not easy to put yourself on a stage where you're running a business where the chance of failure is super high. So just you speaking to the entrepreneurs, just you doing that is something that I admire. And you have a friend in me.
Oh my goodness, that you really made my day, Audra. You are so sincere. Whatever you say and how you show up, it's just always so sweet and kind and sincere. And I loved your comment about, you know, that the community, that partnership, that we are all friends together. And I really believe that it takes a village to rise up, especially when it comes to entrepreneurship, kind of startup world where it maybe sounds sexy and fancy outside, but internally, right, like the shoes you talk about, could be glamorous outside, but there's so much up and down. There's so many challenges in between. But knowing that you are not alone, knowing that if right now you feel fearful, well, you are not alone. I am too. You are too. We are all too. But I love earlier your comment about the death. Mm-hmm. What if today is my last day? What if, you know, this is the last moment? What will be something that I want to make sure I feel proud about? And for me, I have a conversation with myself thinking if I give it my best today, if I leave no chance behind, today's the best day. And if that's the case, that's all going to be worth it.
Yeah, I think there's the, I don't know who made up this rule or the 1%, which is like, can you do 1% every single day to move the needle forward? And I think about that a lot as well, because yeah, it's like my 1% today is coming on this podcast. And then I don't care if I do anything else today. I mean, I have to get some bits and work done, but yeah, it's like, this is my 1% today. Tomorrow I'll have another 1% and onwards. And that's, it's, there's, I think, a muscle, like I said earlier, to be built with just a little bit being enough every day.
Yeah. Well, I want to acknowledge you, Andrea, for being so enough, for bringing your beautiful presence on the show and being so sincere and kind and such an open book. Share about your journey, all the up and all the downs and everything in between. And yet, you know, with so much courage and, you know, share that light with everyone. I feel so inspired.
Thank you. And I'm, you know, I was saying before the show, like, I am so inspired by you and the TED Talk that you gave. And it sounds like, yeah, you are one of the people that I definitely admire with, like, against, you know, all the traditional odds and just putting yourself out there and doing the show and immigrating and all of that. Like, it's, this is what life is about. It's not about knowing the answer. It's about just giving it a shot. And I see that in you. And I admire it a lot. I got goosebumps.
Me too. Thank you for saying that. Because for me, I think about this a lot. I know that a girl, a woman look like me, sounds like me, never meant to come this far and always get a seat on the table. And the fact that I'm here, I really felt it's important for me to make a commitment that I'm going to make it count. Mm-hmm. I want to make every single moment count. So one day, not only me and you, but one day, hopefully we can all rising up to bring more light to everybody around. Because at the end of the day, it's truly never about us. It's about all of us. When we all show up, all rising up, it is a better world together.
Yeah, absolutely.
Brilliant. Well, thank you so much, Andrea, for being here today. You are so just beautiful, kind, and so enough. So thank you.
Thank you, Wen.
And thank you, everybody, for tuning in today. I hope you enjoyed it as much as I do. And we cannot wait to see you all next week. Bye, guys.